Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield to Knightstown and beyond. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
93 WIBC, it is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob. Casey's here. And Casey, we have spent a whole bunch of time this week talking about that huge ruling from the FTC that said, hey, those non-competes that have kept the working man down.
File those.
Yeah, they're out of here. Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe in, what, 120 days?
We'll see.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of legal ramifications for this. So I said, let's get to the bottom from a legal perspective. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be able to walk into our employer and go, ha!
I'm crossing the street if I want.
Or I'm going to walk out with my tail between my legs. One of the great attorneys in all of North America, attorney to the stars, the great Stephen P. New, joins us now. All right, Stephen, so you were tweeting about this. I think the FTC totally got this right. I think these non-competes are awful and wrong and terrible. I think you agree. What say you?
Yes, good morning. I do agree that typically non-competes are awful. I think they are a restraint on trade. I think that those non-competes restrain workers. And I think that the reasons given by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others for being in favor of those, such as trade secrets, employment confidentiality, while valid in this context, it's just a red herring, because there are other mechanisms available that could keep trade secrets secret while also allowing workers' mobility.
So let's talk about this from a legal standpoint, because obviously that is your area of expertise. And Casey and I were talking about this the other day. My contract spells out that I can't go work somewhere else during the length of the contract, and I'm fine with that. I'm being paid. My issue with these non-competes is, if you tell me to get the heck out and hit the door and don't come back, you shouldn't be able to tell me where I can work going forward. And from a legal perspective, am I way out of bounds on that?
No, you are exactly correct. And law students first learn non-compete clauses in first-year contracts. We all learn what non-compete clauses are in contracts. And you are exactly right. The gauge for any non-compete clause is it reasonable in time after the expiration of the contract and geographical area? For instance, an employer prior to this rule could have said, look, for a period of 2 years after the contract expires and a period of 50 miles, you may not do whatever it is that you do, make widgets for any of my competitors.
Do a mediocre midday show on the radio station. I mean, whatever it might be, Stephen.
Right. Practice law as a hillbilly ambulance chaser. You may not do that within a 50-mile radius for a period of 2 years. And that has typically been the traditional legal analysis that we learn in school. And the Federal Trade Commission has studied the effects of such clauses and found that it causes over $100 billion worth of restraint in trade and people not starting up their own startups, things like that, in negative depression of wages. So for the widget maker in the community who may want to go down the street, start her own widget shop, or having the ability to make a few bucks more on the hour or a good bit more money on the hour or whatever, that's what the FTC has found and why this rule has passed, subject, of course, to the immediate legal challenges that were filed.
Okay, well, let's talk about this on a political level. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the largest pro-business lobbying group in the country, said that they're going to sue to block the rule. Now, why would they want to do that? Sounds like a power grab.
It is absolutely a power. Everything that the United States Chamber of Commerce does is a power grab.
Yes! And,
you're welcome for that softball.
And it's designed to try to aid very large businesses. And what the chamber knows is that this is going to affect and hurt, if you will, or impact large multinational corporations. It's not going to hurt the mom and pop business on Main Street. It's going to hurt the large multinational corporations. And not only are they going to sue, they have sued in the Eastern District of Texas, a very conservative federal court. So suits already filed. There will be much litigation over this. But unless there is a stay by a court of the implementation of this rule, then the rule will go into effect. And from a practical standpoint, I think that employers are going to know, probably depending on November's election, that these things are going the way of the dodo bird.
So what does a lawsuit look like? I mean, by the way, Stephen P. New is our guest. Great legal mind. We're talking about this ruling from the FTC that now says essentially within 120 days, barring some sort of legal challenge, that the non-competes are going the way of the dinosaur. But what will the legal challenge look like? Let's put your hat on that you're the other side. What are they going to say to a judge to try to keep these non-competes as a thing?
Well, the challenge will be, Your Honor, we are a business. We have a right to contract with our employee. It's an arm's length transaction, and the government is overstepping its bounds by coming in and telling us what we can and can't contract with our own employees. That rings hollow to me because under that argument, you could argue about things like the minimum wage or OSHA safety rules. Oh, well, how dare the federal government say that I can't electrocute my employees on the job, Your Honor? I mean, you could take an argument like that to its absurd end if you would like. But really, in all seriousness, it's going to be a challenge about whether this FTC rule interferes with what they will portray is a rather benign mechanism of contracting with employees.
Okay, so a lot of these business groups who are pro non-compete agreements, they say that you got to protect those to protect proprietary information, intellectual property. Now, I assert that they're, at least in our industry, Stephen, there are no secrets left in radio. It's all been done. And at this point, we're all just, you know, flattering one another. But
sure,
aren't there other ways to do that, like NDAs or agreements to protect
Absolutely.
The company?
In terms of trade secrets, and you're exactly right, you know, nobody's really got the Colonel's recipe for chicken anymore. You know, I mean, the way that one company is carrying out its business does not exactly contain trade secrets. But let's assume for the sake of argument that there are, or that you just don't want your competitor to know how you're accomplishing those things. A simple confidentiality clause in the employment handbook, an actual NDA, or a confidentiality clause solves that, along with, you could even go so far as to say, if you breach this, we have liquidated damages of $1 million. There's all kinds of other things, other mechanisms available to the employer to protect trade secrets and confidentiality that does not involve saying you can't work for a rival or start your own company for another 3 years within a 50 or 75 mile radius.
Okay, so right now, Congress not given any authority to ban non-competes. I guess there are some bipartisan bills that are being introduced to reform the agreements. Our very own Todd Young is one of the people who is sponsoring this Workforce Mobility Act. Is that going to be enough to do the job, or do they have to ban them altogether?
Well, a congressional act clarifying when, where, how non-competes could be used or non-disclosure agreements would aid a court in analyzing these issues greatly, because you could say, look, this was the intent of Congress. This is what the law says, that you can only have non-competes in these particular types of arenas, and they have to be more reasonable, and they can't last any longer than 60 days beyond the contract, for instance, or terminate at the end of the employment. So it would provide a lot of clarity if a lot of good work went into crafting such a bill.
A couple minutes left with Stephen P. New, great attorney. We're working through legally this huge ruling from the FTC that will affect something like 30 million workers,
yeah,
potentially, if these non-competes go away. Stephen, I look, from just a sheer the kind of politics of it, I think this is fascinating because this will likely, I would assume, and this is more your area than mine, end up at the Supreme Court. And I think this could be one of these wacky rulings where some of the leftist judges side with some of the traditionally more libertarian or conservative judges. You could have a 5-4 ruling, which is all sorts of weird bedfellows. Like guys like Gorsuch have been pretty big on individual rights, so you don't know where he's going to go. This could really, and I'm sure it makes you kind of excited, make some sort of weird coalition of incredible legal precedent.
Well, as one of my political science professors said about NAFTA when it passed, because Bill Clinton and Rush Limbaugh agreed about something, hang on to your hat, because this is going to get interesting, folks. That is exactly right, that for different reasons, there will be different interest groups, and you know, people on the left favor this for one reason or another. People on the right favor this for one reason or the other. The question will be, will there be enough of a coalition, either in Congress or at the Supreme Court, that shapes the future of these non-compete agreements?
Now, you are located in West Virginia, Stephen P. New, but you are licensed in many of the 50 states. Is that correct?
Only on a temporary basis. I've had cases in about 10 or 12 different states. I'm doing cases from Kentucky to California right now in different sorts. And so I get admitted what's called pro hoc vici, just on a temporary basis in another state when I need to.
All right. If people want to learn more about you, Stephen P. New, how do they do that?
At Stephen P. New on Twitter. It's a good follow. And also newlawoffice.com.
We got to have you back soon because there's so much going on with this Vince McMahon drama, which is why we had you on the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's issued a retort to these incredible allegations against him. So maybe in a couple weeks, if you're up to it, we'll have you back on and we'll talk about some pro wrestling, which is kind of your area of expertise.
Well, yes, much to the chagrin of those who love me, pro wrestling has become an area of my expertise, a merging of my passions, if you will. I'd love to come on and talk about this really interesting, really complex motion to compel arbitration that's been filed in Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Stephen P. New, you're the best. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. You got a problem? What's your problem? It's Friday. No problems on a Friday.
Well, we've reached a crisis point in this building.
Oh, sure we have.
And I did not know about this until the most recent stop in the action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for years, we have long talked about my ability to finagle reasonably priced sodas out of this building.
Yeah.
And many, many, many years, it was backed up when Mr. Smolian owned the company. There was a seventh floor, a very nice lady who worked on the seventh floor, which is where the big muckety mucks, all the executives and the HR people and whatever, worked. But she took pity on me because she knew I was poor.
Mm-hmm.
And she
signed your paycheck.
She kept up a little mini fridge mm-hmm. full of sodas for people on the seventh floor, and they were priced at 50 cents a piece.
Nice.
And so I could go up there and get two
mm-hmm. a little sweet
Coca-Colas.
Yeah.
And she always took pity on me, and it was an honor system, and she gave me permission to be a part of that. And, of course, then when we got sold, they cut off our access to the seventh floor. I don't know if you noticed that. You swipe your badge, you can't even get up there anymore.
I've not tried to go up there.
You tried to do that during the break. You can't get up there anymore.
Okay.
So that got cut off. Thankfully, there was still on the sixth floor a vending machine that had canned soda. Mm-hmm. So while they were a dollar instead of 50 cents, I still deemed that a reasonable, you know, as to steal a line from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a troll toll to pay to get my soda. And if I was irresponsible and left my soda at home, that I would just have to pay the tax. That was sort of like a soda tax.
Yeah.
And get my soda. Then, of course, we had the well-documented meltdown of that vending machine.
Right.
Where they had to wheel it out.
Through the lobby, right? It was like they brought a replacement in.
But it was like watching a member of the family get wheeled out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they replaced it. But the problem with the replacement was it was the bottled soda.
Okay.
So now
it's more expensive.
$2.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm just simply not paying the $2. That's inflation is not going to get me mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
So today I had forgotten my soda at home. I said, okay, I got to go pay. I guess I'm just going to have to suck it up, see what's up
pay
there.
The
I don't even know what they're doing anymore.
Yeah.
We had a big all office, all company meet and greet yesterday.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe in one of these refrigerators they had stored those extra sodas somewhere.
You're hopping on every floor to check.
And I literally went 4, 5, 6. Didn't really see what. There were some sodas, but I didn't think those were the sodas. So I thought, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to buy this soda from the vending machine. It's gone.
What?
As in it's a giant hole in the wall where the vending machine once was. There's nothing there.
The one that was just replaced.
Yes. Now, keep in mind, since that replacement, we have consolidated all of our company down to just two floors, the fifth and fourth floor. It appears there's nothing or any sort of tenant up on the sixth floor, but the vending machine is gone. So I went down to the first floor and I asked Steven, and of course, Steven is the upstanding citizen who mans the front desk here at the mm-hmm. Smolian Incorporated. I don't know, is it still Emmis? What are we now? Whatever this building is that we're in.
Yeah.
I think there still is an Emmis,
even though
it's not Emmis Communications. The
That's
Emmis
what
building,
the sign says.
Emmis, the Emmis building. And I asked sweet Steven, I said, Steven, mm-hmm. what floor does the vending machine now reside on?
Yeah.
Because it's not on the sixth floor. And Steven then informed me there is no more vending machine, period, in this entire building.
What?
Oh, wow.
We're a 7-floor building without a vending machine.
They did just install a new coffee maker.
Yeah.
I don't drink coffee, Casey. It doesn't do me any good.
There's a box that has green tea in it, and it's mm-hmm. got hot chocolate as well.
Okay, but I had this conversation with you. I feel like I have, because there's been so much free hot chocolate, mm-hmm. I've simply...
Too much.
Consumed so much hot chocolate
You're
that
the one.
I'm going to get physically ill if I consume anymore.
Try the green tea.
That sounds horrific,
I think
Kevin.
You would enjoy a little
Kevin,
matcha
that sounds
green tea.
Awful. I think I've had that before at a mm-hmm. Starbucks or something mm-hmm. with my wife, and it was awful.
It's not that flavorful, but it's great for the mind. It really stimulates your mind.
Now, here's the thing. This sounds like a you problem. However, I did bring an extra Coke with me today, as I normally do, and I offered it to you.
I'm not going to be beholden to you. I'm not going to be subservient or beholden to you.
You used to bring,
you think I would hold that over your head?
I
gave you a Coke.
Yeah, absolutely.
You used to bring breakfast bars for us.
Yeah, what happened to that?
I did, didn't I? I
Remember
used
when
to
she,
feed you guys
yeah,
every
then
morning.
You gave up on us. We were abandoned.
Remember when she first got here, she was buying us lottery tickets mm-hmm. and breakfast bars.
Yeah.
And now she could care less if we're taken
right.
care of.
Well, it didn't change your, you know, your attitude toward me. I thought I'd at least sweeten you guys up a little, and it didn't help.
So that's not how gifts work, though.
So we now...
I was trying to manipulate you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Can we focus for a second here?
On your problem? back to you.
We're in a 7-floor building uh-huh. and we don't have a single vending machine?
Yeah. Apparently. So there's no...
Third world countries have it better than that.
There's no plan to replace?
I bet if you went to a building in Ethiopia, they would have a vending machine in one of those dilapidated buildings.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing here? Can we call OSHA, or is there some international human rights group?
That's not how that works.
That we can bring into this equation? The United Nations?
Here's what needs to happen.
You're one of those inspectors with the hard hats walking around?
You just need to bring your own beverage.
Well, I will start doing that.
You're a grown-ass man. Bring your own drink.
I do, but that does not excuse the just horrific conditions we're not working in.
Are you sure? Did you ask? Is
I
there
asked.
A plan?
Steven would know.
He said there's no plan to bring in
He's
a vending machine.
He's the front gate to the entire building. Nothing happens
he
without
is the
Steven.
Gatekeeper.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get into kind of do a reset on this Indy 11 Joe Hogsett thing, because it is just absolutely wild beyond belief.
All right, it's Kendall and Casey.
I'll go get my water.
It's 93 WIBC. Indianapolis going after a Major League Soccer team and doing it without Indy 11. Good morning. It is 10:34 with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
This is an incredible story. It is one of the most interesting stories to happen in the city of Indianapolis in a very long time. And it is a story that I think is going to have 100 twists and turns as it plays out in the media, as things get leaked out. And I would say most people tend to think this is going to now end up in a court somewhere, which hopefully everything will then come out. So again, just a very high level, if you were kind of been hiding in a cave or under a rock or asleep for the past, I don't know what that'd be, 16 hours.
Or perhaps just relying on the Kendall and Casey show for your information.
So yesterday afternoon, a report in the IBJ came out that the Keystone Group, which is funding this big development to house the Indy 11 catty corner from Lucas Oil Stadium, multi-billion dollar investment, that they are pulling out. There's going to be no soccer stadium and they're done. And everybody's like, what in the world is going on here? Because if you drive past it, the demolition's already occurred. That appears to be in full process. And within hours, Joe Hogsett announced he's having a press conference. And his press conference was, I've gone to New York. I've met with Major League Soccer and I have an ownership group in place that wants to place a bid or try to attract a soccer team to the city, a Major League Soccer team to the city of Indianapolis. No questions answered. Adios, see ya, walks off the podium. Now, apparently today he's been doing the, he being Hogsett, has been doing the rounds.
Yeah.
And he sat down with our Wish TV, our news gathering partners at Wish TV. And basically the question from a lot of people is like, what the hell's going on here? What about Indy 11? They've put all this effort in. You went through the legislative process. Keep in mind, the city of Indianapolis was a huge supporter of the Indy 11 getting a special tax district from the Indiana General Assembly. Obviously, Hogsett and his administration giving the blessing on that, which has been created to fund that whole development across from Lucas Oil Stadium. And Hogsett basically today told Wish TV, Ursula Ozdemir and the Indy 11, they're on their own now.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is just looking around going, wait a second. The Indy 11 have been around for 11 years now. Yesterday was the 11th anniversary of the announcement of that team. While they haven't, this is not an Indianapolis Colts type of fervor and fan base, they do have a very hardcore group of people who regularly attend. It has been a benefit for the city for them to be here. You just as recently as a couple of years ago threw your full weight and support behind them and this development, and now you're stabbing them in the back and basically like, good luck, hope you can figure it out. Well, how is a minor league soccer team going to survive if a major league soccer team comes here?
So it's a 20,000 seat stadium, that $1.5 billion project with Keystone that they began. Work has already begun on that. So now are they going to take that area and try to make that the MLS stadium? So MLS did release a statement and they said it was exciting to hear Mayor Hogsett's vision for a new soccer specific stadium in Indianapolis. They're familiar with Indy because we made this pitch to them 7 years ago. Now, at that time, they said, no, thank you. So what has changed now?
Okay, so here's the other side of this. And what's interesting is this almost exact same thing is playing out in the National Football League with the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears announced the other day that they have this plan, along with the city of Chicago, to build a stadium, a domed stadium, near the waterfront, very near where their current stadium is. However, that plan to build that stadium involves approval, a taxing issue approval from the Illinois General Assembly. And the Illinois speaker came out the other day and was like, nope, that ain't happening. No way, no how. What's interesting with this is the stadium that was approved for the Indy 11 is going to be privately funded. Now, the government is helping out in the sense of they've created this special taxing district, and I'm simplifying a very complex thing here, and there's more to it than this, but in the time we have, where basically all the tax revenue that is created in that area is going to stay in that area. So the Keystone Group will fund it. They'll build the buildings. It's not going to be public money that we were aware of. And the tax revenue that's generated from those new buildings going up will eventually go to pay that group back, and then everybody will get out ahead. Hogsett yesterday in this bizarro press conference seemed to indicate that this is going to be a publicly funded stadium, which is totally different than what was going to go on with Indy 11. So Abdul then came out and said the city council is not for this at all.
Okay, and now it's being reported that the stadium would only be built if there was a guarantee of the MLS team, which... Okay, so this is chicken and egg here.
Right.
Okay, somebody's going to front the $500 million to guarantee the MLS team. And then you get that, but they don't have a stadium, and that's got to be approved to be built. What?
Well, and don't forget, the other part of this is that both Tampa and Sacramento are currently bidding for MLS teams as well. So there's no guarantee that even if you do indeed have this ownership group in place, which Hogsett is being as untransparent as he possibly can be about it. Now, what is interesting is he had that press conference where he had a chance to control the narrative yesterday, didn't do it, and now is making all sorts of rounds. We've heard multiple media outlets. We mentioned Wish TV. I think he was on a local radio station. So clearly, this didn't go well for him yesterday because he had an opportunity to fire all the shots yesterday and say whatever he wanted to say and said nothing. And now he's going out doing these interviews today, which means he got a lot of pushback. And if you're the Indy 11, you've got to be sitting here in the Özil Özdemir and the ownership group there. You've got to be saying, wait a second. We've invested 10 years in this city. We have done everything to try to be good stewards, good citizens. We've played at a variety of different places. We did all this work to get, with your blessing, to get this stadium plan put in place. We've tried to do it as close as we can with private money to mitigate the risk to taxpayers as a collective. And this is how we're being treated. I mean, can you imagine if, like, when Major League Baseball expands again, if they'd come in and say, hey, Indians, thanks for 100 great years. You're out. See ya. It doesn't make any sense to me why the city would have been such a supporter of this plan to create this special taxing district and this development across from Lucas Oil Stadium. And that wasn't like it was in the Stone Ages. It was a couple of years ago when this thing was put forward and finally approved. And now it's like, you're on your own.
Okay, so the Metropolitan Development Commission has to approve this, and then it has to go to the City County Council, and they have to approve it for a final vote.
Which is where Abdul has said, and Abdul usually, when he put, Abdul, by the way, was the first one to get, after they announced Hogsett was having that, they had just initially described it as a press conference about, exciting sporting possibilities or whatever. And Abdul was the first one who said, this is about a MLS team coming and an ownership group that is behind that. So he got that 100% right. So I have no reason to doubt Abdul's right on this when he says that the city county council is not supporting a publicly funded taxpayer stadium.
Well, why would they believe Hogsett at this point? He was actually at the groundbreaking ceremony for the Indy 11 Park.
This whole thing is crazy, and there are so many tentacles to it. And here is the kind of the big takeaway from this is relationships are built on trust. Whether it is a business relationship, whether it is a personal relationship, whether it is with family members, whether it is someone you're sharing a bedroom with, successful, thriving relationships are built on trust. And the repeated behavior of Joe Hogsett, whether it is supporting criminals going free and blaming the police during shootings where law enforcement officers are shot at, whether it is allowing the city to be ransacked and rioted and literally disappearing, and then afterwards appearing to be supportive of the people who did the destruction, or now things like this. You cannot trust Joe Hogsett. Why anyone, given the behavior they're seeing, it's like if you're engaging in interpersonal relations with someone and you're engaging in interpersonal relations with someone who's cheating on someone else, then you don't act surprised when ultimately they do it to you because they're showing you what they are. And if you're this ownership group, if Joe Hogsett is willing to treat the Indy 11, who have been great stewards and tenants, and look, they've got some politics and weighed in some stuff that I don't agree with, but overall, they've been a huge net benefit to the city of Indianapolis. If he's willing to treat them like this, why would you think he wouldn't do it to you eventually?
I'm just wondering why Is Hogsett trying to like cut his losses? Like, did he not think the Keystone Group could put it together and finance their project? And so he's saying, okay, you know what, done with you, moving on.
I think what happened, and then we'll take a break because we've got to find out how fat Hammer is. I think what happened is Hogsett doesn't believe Ursula Ozdemir and that group will ever be able to have the financial resources to become a Major League Soccer stadium, mm-hmm. which left him with two options.
Yeah.
Which is the good and decent thing would be to say, we have this great community partner who has this proposal that while they may not be Major League Soccer, they have proposed a huge benefit to the city of Indianapolis. They've been good stewards. We have this plan in place. Let's just go forward with them, and hopefully we'll create a financial juggernaut and attraction like Victory Field has been for the Indians. But instead of doing that, he's stabbing these people in the back going, well, there's a brighter, shinier object.
It's the BBD, bigger, better deal.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where you were going to go with that. Uh-huh. And so, if you're someone who is proposing doing business with the city of Indianapolis, you better get it all in writing.
Look
and
out.
Even if it may be in writing, it don't matter because Joe Hogsett will absolutely stab you in the back.
Turn around and do it to you. Hammer's up next. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Well, he's here, and we're going to find out how much he weighs. Hammer joins Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Good morning.
Boy, I'm out of breath because I'm running to get here in time. I normally get off on the highway and I get off from 70 on the exit that is Illinois Street Meridian.
Oh, is this going to be some old man driving story? Is this what this is going to be?
Yeah, it's a little break from the old man politics that you have. So let me entertain
you. Go on,
your
Grandpa.
For just a
Tell
second.
Us about your poor driving.
What happened?
My poor driving. The road was closed. My question is, why does the city of Indianapolis decide to close Illinois Street, mm-hmm. which leads you into downtown, the weekend where we've got the PopCon convention, mm-hmm. two big NBA playoff games.
Right.
All week long, not a damn thing's been happening in Indianapolis. But yet now, when you get off on the highway, you've got to navigate around and play, you know, some sort of, you know, navigator game just to get where you want to be.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to side with you on that. That is a poor move. I just thought you were being a prima donna about your driving, but no.
What was it? Was it construction or?
Yeah, they've got the orange barrels out, and you cannot drive here, road closed.
Oh, yeah.
It's right by the bridge, kind of near where Slippery Noodle area
does
is.
Does seem like it, because they'd had that down to one lane. That's how I come into work each mm-hmm. morning. And
maybe they're installing the ramp metering.
probably something is equally useless. But yes, good point.
But does like the folks at the, you know, group that puts the construction together, do they not check the calendars with anybody else? Because it feels like this happens a lot. Like, how many years do we have like construction starting the week before the Indy 500 on Crawfordsville
Road? Yeah, that's a great point. That's a fair point. All right, Chunky, you ready to get up on the stage and find out how chubby you are?
239.4. That's what I got to beat this week.
Let's go. So, let's see, that would put him down, what is that, 32-ish pounds throughout the course of the whole process. And there, now you're going over the scale and looking at it.
He's got it, I feel like.
Yeah!
Look at your crack pipe smoking. Brownsburg sucks!
How did Brownsburg sucks get into...
It's really just a knock on you.
Oh,
I have nothing against the fine people.
Oh, now I'm responsible for what's going on out there.
I feel
thank
like
you.
I can tell just by looking at you that you've lost weight, if you're going to make it or not. But you're definitely looking trim and thin.
Thank you.
Days.
And let the record clearly state, uh-huh. there's none of that Ozempic crap going on here.
He
right?
doesn't have Ozempic face.
Like, there's some personalities on other radio stations throughout the city. They're doing endorsements for these weight loss drugs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
None of that's happening here. It's pure 100% American badass, just deciding not to eat so damn much, mixing in a little bit more water, and working it off.
There you go.
You're down 33 pounds now, and I think you've done it the right way this time. And I hope for your own personal health, you don't just explode with weight gain like you've done in the past. I hope this has inspired you to be more healthy year-round.
Right, because in the past, I've wanted to get this quest to 50 pounds done as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And there'd be times where I wouldn't eat or, you know, whatever, you know, and I didn't want to do that this time around. I want to make it like an actual life change.
Yeah.
And we're doing it right, I think, this time. 1 pound a week, kind of maybe two once in a while.
Yep.
And I think this is the right way to do it. So anybody that's telling you on the radio, I'm taking this weight loss drug, not here, baby.
Yeah.
Suck it.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So that leads us to what the Colts kind of did to the fan base last night. Kind of a disappointing pick at number 15.
Like, I don't know what to think about this. I really don't. Because all these mock drafts, now, again, normally you can just print the mock draft off, wipe your backside with it. That's all they're valued for. But had wide receiver or a lockdown member of the secondary. But the way the draft played out, there were no defensive players taken when the Colts were on the board.
Yeah, they were number one.
So they got the choice of all the defensive players that were available. And the good news is the best pass rusher in college football, by a long shot, was available. Now, the bad news is he's got a history of neck injuries and had to retire at one point and then came back.
And then I was listening to the Fan Morning Show today coming in, and they were talking about his answer on what happened with his neck is this bizarro thing where he tried to say they didn't check him because of COVID. And then Andy Sweeney pointed out, dude, you were out of the game for like a year, 2 years. I don't think that was COVID related. So nobody really knows. But apparently past the Colts physical, you'd assume.
Right. And all the NFL draft guys like on set say he's by far the best pass rusher in this year's draft. Now, can he stay healthy? That's the question. So we'll see.
Kind of boring pick, though. I wanted some excitement. I was thinking, we trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. Do we trade up and get Brock Bowers? We got an edge rusher. Kind of boring.
I mean, good teams need an edge rusher. They do. But Chris Ballard doesn't have a great track record of trying to find that edge rusher.
You know who stole the draft, and I'm giving an A-plus to, is the Chicago Bears, because we got a quarterback and a receiver out of the draft.
A lot of quarterbacks went early.
It's rare I have anything nice to say about the Bears, so just let me have this for one day that I felt like the Bears aced the draft. And I don't know if I've ever said that in my entire adult life.
And from what I've seen, teams that win free agency in the draft always have success the next year.
You are going to eat it this year, buddy.
Or not.
I don't know what the win total for the Bears is, but anything under 13, I'm going over, baby. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an explosion of offense in the Windy City.
Just be honest. As a Bear fan, how is the city of Chicago, those big, fat, sausage-snorting Bear fans, going to react when Caleb Williams is walking around with his painted nails and doing his things that he likes to do?
We had Jim McMahon as the quarterback. It's going to be just fine, Hammer. Just let me have it. Just one day.
You got it.
One day.
Just grit your teeth, get through summer, and football will be here.
Coming up this afternoon.
So we are also going to dive into this Indy 11 thing. There's a lot of layers. You should come back.
Oh, let's do it.
All right. Rob's going to join us this afternoon. And it's Beer Sample Friday.
Thanks, Hammer. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.